Hello, this is Debbie again with the Decatur Herald Review, and we start the second part with death notices. Decatur. Betty E. Arnold, 79, of Decatur, passed away Sunday, June 14, 2015, in Decatur Memorial Hospital. Betty was born March 29, 1936, in Stonington, Illinois. Services to celebrate Betty's life will be 11 a.m. Friday, June 19, 2015, at Antioch Christian Church, 5409 US 36, Decatur. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to service at the church. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery. The family of Betty E. Arnold is being served by the Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home on North Oakland in Decatur. Decatur. Richard Allen Hill, 85, of Decatur, passed away Sunday, June 14, 2015, in Decatur Memorial Hospital. He was born November 15, 1929, in Quincy, Illinois. Services to celebrate Dick's life will be 2 p.m. Thursday, June 18, 2015. Will be for 1 hour prior to the services. Burial with military honors will be in Graceland Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to the Macon County Honor Guard. The family of Richard Allen is being served by the Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home on Oakland Avenue in Decatur. Decatur, Dolores M. Hilton, 78, of Decatur, died. Excuse me, Dolores M. Hilton, 78, at Decatur, passed away Monday, June 15, 2015, at St. Mary's Hospital. Dolores was born on June 6, 1937, in Decatur. Mass of Christian burial will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Saturday, June 20, 2015, in Our Lady of the Holy Spirit Catholic Church, Mount Zion. Very Reverend Joseph M. Molloy, VF, celebrant, and assisted by Deacon Jim Giglione. Visitation will be 5 to 7 Friday, June 19, 2015, in the Moran and Gable Funeral Home. Burial will be in Macon County Memorial Park Cemetery. Memorial donations are suggested to Homeward Bound Animal Shelter. Decatur, Marjorie Laverne McClure. Marjorie Laverne Carnahan McClure, 89, of Decatur, died April 30, 2015. Ashes will be buried 5:30 p.m. Wednesday in North Fork Cemetery. Arrangements by Britlinger and Earle Funeral Homes, Decatur. Oakley, Robert Dale Lukes, 91, Mountain Home, Arkansas, formerly of Oklahoma, Oakley, retired Air Force veteran, died Saturday, June 13, 2015. Memorial services are today at 3 p.m. Kirby and Family Funeral Home Chapel, Mountain Home. Burial will be at the Arlington National Cemetery, Washington, D.C. Condolences can be sent to Kirby and Family Funeral Home Chapel online. Middlesworth. Virginia Ruth McCoy, 88, a Mohiqua, formerly of Middlesworth, Illinois, died at 9:55 p.m. Sunday, June 14th, in Mohiqua Nursing and Retirement Center, Mohiqua. Funeral services will be held 11 a.m. Saturday, June 20th, in Hauinaki Funeral Home, Shelbyville, Illinois, with Reverend Kevin Ray officiating. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday in the funeral home. Casual attire is requested. Burial will follow in Cochran's Grove, Ash Grove Cemetery, south of Windsor, Illinois. Please do not feel you have to attend the cemetery due to the heat. Memorials will be given to the Alzheimer's Association. Decatur, William G. Roth. William G. Roth, 92, of McAllen, Texas, formerly of Decatur, passed away Sunday, March 22, 2015, in McAllen, Texas. He was born April 11, 1922, in Decatur. A graveside service to celebrate William's life will be 1 p.m. Saturday, June 20th, 2015 in Fairlawn Cemetery. The family of William G. Roth is being served by the Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home on Oakland Avenue in Decatur. Pena, Mary Edith Temman. Mary Edith Payman, 90, Pena, formerly of Oconee, died Monday, June 15, 2015. Funeral Mass, 10 a.m. Thursday, Sacred Heart Catholic Church, Oconee. Visitation, 5 to 8 p.m. Wednesday, McCracken Dean Funeral Home, Pena. Burial, Sacred Heart Cemetery. Memorials, Pena Community Hospital Foundation or Sacred Heart Church. And that is the end of the obituaries for June 17th, 2015 from the Herald and Review. Moving on. Ingenuity, imagination, and tape leads campers to discoveries. There's a picture of an 8-year-old, Mia Sixto, helping design and assemble a survival shelter with fellow participants during Camp Connections at Balm School. This is by Valerie Wells of the Herald and Review. Decatur. Using a combination of garbage bags, plastic tablecloths, tape, and ingenuity, Zoe Summers and Marzito Badillo built a shelter in a classroom at Baum School. Dubbed Minions 5, the two soon-to-be third graders wrote their names and their team name on a pizza box and propped it up in front of their creation. "We're making shelters out of whatever we can find," Zoe explained. The entire group at Decatur School's Camp Connection site at Baum is working on superhero-themed activities, said teacher Kelly Larrick. "But it's not just the Batman and Superman. It's about being heroes to others by standing ready to help when somebody's in need. And it's about recognizing the heroes among the people around them who serve others." The shelters project, said Brita Wilson, who teaches the, quote, cabin, unquote, where Zoe and Marzita were building their shelter, is to get the kids thinking about what they could do to survive and assist in the event of a natural disaster like a tornado. "We're talking about how they can be heroes," she said, "and how they can be heroes to other people and to animals. They're learning about Habitat for Humanity, which helps people build and own their own homes. And another group is making cat and dog toys and treats for Homeward Bound and the Macon County Animal Control and Care Center." Counselor Katie Hill set the kids to work tearing up t-shirts to braid into chew toys for dogs, and later the kids will mix up homemade biscuits, which Hill will take home and bake. All the donations will go to the area shelters, and donations from the community help pay for the supplies. Evan Cook can pull up a video of cat yoga classes at Yoga at Connie's, where shelter cats wandered around in class and one found a home. Evan's mother was in that class. The kids did some internet research to find out what it takes to adopt an animal from the local shelters and are making posters and videos to promote pet adoption, said Arlegin Hamilton. "I'm an animal lover," she said. Another project, said Counselor Laura Miller, is to look for the superheroes at school, like their teachers, the nurse, the custodians and bus drivers, and other adults. In her cabin, the kids will write a script and serve as actors, director, and camera operator to make a video about those school heroes. End of that article. Continuing on, sort of have a theme here of summer camps. June 15th, from Valerie Wells, Warrensburg, the whole school showroom at the Perfect Pair in Warrensburg illustrates the theme of this year's Smash Camp, which is how we value the undervalued. Owner Juana Timmons welcomed the Decatur students and gave them a scavenger hunt. They had to find the items listed, which had been all reborn as new things, not necessarily recognizable as their original selves. "These are totally different purposes for them now," Timmons said. "It's kind of interesting to see. Most of them got most of them right, but there were a couple they were stumped by. The side of a barn became a wall. Three dining room chairs became a bench. An old sewing machine became a table, and the roof of a barn became letters to hang on a wall." Smash campers are keeping diaries and working on their ideas for their own projects, which they will make and sell as part of the camp, said Counselor Cammie. meter, the visit to Perfect Pear was to show them that almost anything can be made into something else. One of the features of the business is that Timmons finds photos of potential projects on Pinterest, prints them out, and hangs them on pieces that are for sale. As they are. We're constantly trying to inspire people, she said. In the showroom, we have pieces that are already done, and out here we try to give our customers an idea of what they can do with it. Basically, if you don't want me to pay to do it, come out to the warehouse and buy something and do it yourself. Several of the campers sat down in a former church pew nearby and scribbled furiously in their notebooks, while others wandered through the showroom looking at dining tables, chairs, and china cabinets, discussing ways and those things could be repurposed into other uses. You can take a thing that nobody has had a use for a while, fix it up, and sell it for a profit, Meador said. It's finding value in something people might throw away and finding value in themselves. One step in this process was a tour of Millikan University's campus, she said, and students were to assign a value to things they found. Education, they decided, is priceless. And parallel to that, they're writing their own stories, finding out their own skill set, finding out who they are, their personalities, and their leadership skills and traits, she said. It's pretty cool. Timmons takes stuff and reuses it to make things interesting, said Tate Ferguson, 13. We're taking stuff at camp and trying to repurpose stuff and make something new out of it. So this is giving me ideas on what to do to repurpose our stuff and make new stuff. End of the article. Article from a tune from Dave Fope from the Lee News Services. The headline of the article is Chalk Artist Returns to Add Colorful Fun to Mattoon Artworks. Scott Barber said he wanted to capture the spirit of freedom, youthfulness, and fun with his creation for the annual Artworks Festival Saturday. They told me I could do what I wanted, was his simple explanation for how he came up with the theme of the chalk drawing he created. Barber spent Saturday afternoon using different colored chalks to place a large drawing of a mermaid on the outside of wall of Hunan Restaurant in downtown Mattoon. It marked his second year doing a chalk drawing as part of Mattoon Arts Council event. Mattoon's Art Council event activities. A Mattoon native who now lives in Urbana, Barber said he has an art degree from Eastern Illinois University in Charleston and has a business that sells clothing and does graphic design. He said he likes the sea and hopes his mermaid drawing would show her almost inviting people to join her. He said the drawing should remain on the wall until it rains. He also said drawing on the building's wall was easier to do than the ballerina drawing he did on the ground at the festival last year. Oh, he also said that drawing on the building's wall was easier to do than doing the one on the ground last year. Artworks visitors had a good view of Barber's drawing Saturday while visiting the vendor booths, listening to music, or taking part in other activities in the Progress Square's parking lot. There were other festival activities in the lot on the other side of 17th Street, as well as in the train depot across Broadway Avenue. Event organizer John Hunt, Colden said there are plans to use more of the vacant lot to bring more variety of arts to the festival. That first name is J-A-N-A-H-M. Maybe it's Jane Ann. We hope people experience art and actually work hands on it. Works hands-on. The festival included visual arts, theater, music, and dance events and was a way to promote local artists, Colden said. Saturday marked the fourth year for the festival and second at the downtown location as it took place in Mattoon's Prudison Park in the last 2 years. Colden said Progress Square area will be Artworks' permanent home because the location is very visual and easy for passerbyers to see and consider visiting. Clinton gardeners show off their skills during tour. The picture shows Sharon Ijams looking over her garden, which including the centerpiece, a 200-year-old oak. The garden was a part of the Gala of Gardens in Clinton. Clinton, not everyone welcomes the chance to start from scratch, says the Herald and Review senior writer Teresa Churchill. Yet when Terry and Cheer and I, Gems, headed out to the country a couple years ago, leaving behind the home in Clinton where they'd raised their three children. Sharon embraced the mostly blank canvas she gained in her new backyard. It was kind of a traumatic experience because we loved that old house, she said, but it's been fun creating something new. With the help from their son, Robert, a landscape architect who lives in Oswego, iGems and her husband have already built a striking sanctuary behind their brick home. Their yardscape is one of four gardens to be featured Saturday during the annual Gala of Gardens Walk benefiting Dove Incorporated Domestic Violence Program in DeWitt County. Last summer was a good year for recovery for some harsh winters, said Ruth Lowers, chairwoman of the event. We've had good weather this spring, too, so everyone's out of survival mode and gardens are looking really beautiful. The iGems landscape is no exception, with their addition of a new deck and patio creating multiple levels for color. Sharon iGem starts with Wine and Roses Wegla, Marguerite Daisies, White Alyssum, and a riot of annual phlox on the ground and moves up to containers with an assortment of geraniums, New Guinea impatiens, verbena, coleus, and more on the patio. The patio wall steps leading up to the deck and the deck itself. Mixing annuals and perennials is a great way to guarantee color in the garden all season long, said Karen Traum, University of Illinois Extension Master Gardener Coordinator, DeWitt and Piatt Counties. Beyond an expanse of grass, along a rustic wooden fence are separate garden areas flourishing in a mixture of sunlight and shade. They include a focal point for a bird bath adorned by a variety of daylilies, purple clematis, and more, flanked by two other areas where hosta are the prominent feature. I have planted maybe 250 plants, Sharon iGem said. Phlox are my favorite. Among others are her late mother's hydrangeas, transplanted from the garden of her former home. My husband will dig a hole where I ask him, so this is really my kind of thing, iGem said. We have our own little resort back here. End of the article. Prairie Talk, recycling weight, a test to success. Know first and foremost that I'm pro-recycling. Decatur and Macon County have set up a good system to keep a big chunk of waste out of the landfill. But, and this is not a criticism, they've become a victim of their own success. On a recent sunny, steamy Saturday, I and my fellow recyclers committed ourselves to turn in electronics items at Progress City, USA, where the hundreds of well-meaning people inching their way through the line thinking there had to be a better way. I had missed the first electronics roundup organized by the Macon County Environmental Management Department. This time I vowed I would get it done. A friend had been there warned me to get ready to wait. She'd spent an hour in line. The deal was sealed when my adult daughter and I strained to get a worn-out 2-ton TV out of the basement and out to my car. This was no flat screen. The behemoth didn't fit in the trunk. It'd have to be a front seat passenger. For good measure, I had a couple of VCRs. Remember those? And a small speaker to drop off. I drove to the Richland Community College and eventually saw a sign in Progress City that pointed me to the right gate. I glanced at the car clock, 11:48 a.m. The line extended almost up to that entrance. I could see no sign of the collection trucks. No turning back, I concluded. Our 2-ton had to go to the recycling pile. My iPod was loaded, and I had 3 hours before work was to start. Inch, 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 a half hour went by. As I absorbed a comedy show about current events, I became aware that my gas gauge was hugging the E as though they were family members. We're going to discover something about this car, I thought. 2-ton didn't seem to care. Inch, 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 another half hour gone. Pickups and SUVs snake through the various loops on the path to the collection trucks. I'm only now noticing on the horizon. Wouldn't concession stands along the way have been a good idea? Inch, inch, inch. It's after 1 p.m. and my iPod now has clicked on to an interview with Roger Ebert's widow. The gas is holding out, although I suspect the Marathon station is a mirage. I've memorized the license plate of the tan truck with a license plate holder in the shape of a chain and a rust hole in the right fender. I wonder if my car has any rust, I wondered, because there was time for wondering. More waiting, more winding along the recycling trail. I remembered I had read there were 600 vehicles participating in the March recycling event. I kept my cynical side from adding a zero to the total for this Saturday morning. Afternoon. No turning back. But wait, just up ahead. Were those two women with clipboards another mirage? They were real people, greeting me, thanking me for my patience. No cool drinks or bar snacks, though. They asked me how I'd heard about the event. I had read about it in the newspaper, in a tone that suggested there was no better way to find out. Now I was pumped up. I knew there was an end, a goal, a reward. My gas tank was cooperating. All was good. I looked behind me to see several dozen cars still snaking through the ground. Better news. The line was now broken, too. I was now near ground zero of the collection drive. Two cars, one car, my turn. I looked at my clock, 1:32 p.m. A strapping young man came up to the passenger side of the car, looking very warm and red-faced. I asked him how long he'd been here. 8 o'clock. How long did he say he'd think he'd stay? Oh, another hour. Then I go home and sleep. I wondered if he was going to need my help, hefting the 2-ton out of my Dodge. Uh-oh. The fellow just bent down, yanked it out as though it were a gallon of milk. Very impressive. As was the whole event. The bright orange brochure they handed me spoke of upcoming collections for paint, oil, and Christmas lights, and of the mega recycling event on October 3rd with everything from tires to eyeglasses accepted. I wish them well, but I don't intend to be there when the gates open at 9 a.m., maybe later that day. But remember, I'm all for recycling. Please participate. Just be ready to invest some time and be patient. Oh, and fill your gas tank. This is by D. Zacher for the Herald Review. Category of therapy, LifeLinks grant aimed at helping reach children. This is by Dave Fopay from the Lee News Service. Mattoon, while it's becoming more common for kids to need counseling and similar help, there are things that can get in the way of their getting it. Circumstances surrounding a family's economic status can make it tough to get children to counseling, so maybe counseling can come to them. That's what officials with the LifeLinks Mental Health Center say is the aim of a program that's in the works thanks to a grant from a private organization that focuses on children's health. A lack of transportation is a frequent barrier to linking children with treatment, says Tara Ogle, LifeLinks Director of Outpatient Services. We're seeing more kids come into therapy, Ogle said. Mobile services will really work with them. The $99,017 grant from the Illinois Children's Health Care Foundation will be used to start the mobile program, set to start next month. LifeLinks, located in Mattoon, already has a screening program that has counselors to visit children in their homes to help determine what treatment they need. But that ends after 90 days, and when it concludes, some children sort of just drop out, said Lynette Ashmore, LifeLinks Executive Director. So the agency applied for the grant because there's always been a need for long-term programs, she explained. Ogle said there's an average of 125 children in the screening program each month, and there have been patients as young as 2 years old. She said there's appeared to be several reasons for the increase in children needing counseling, including economic factors and rise in autism. Common problems for younger patients include depression, anxiety, behavior, and what Ashmore calls psychological trauma. It's best to look at the impact of those issues on a family as a whole, so there'll be a part for parents in the program, she said. You can't treat a 2-year-old without parental involvement, Ashmore said. The program will also include the use of several toys, such as dolls, for children to show their family dynamics or act out experiences, Ogle said. There are also games to help build relationships and art therapy that can help reduce symptoms by expressing emotions, she said. Ashmore said the program should be able to start as soon as the grant money is available on July 1st. Two current staff members from the screening program, clinician Rachel Schall and technician Megan Butler, will be moving to the mobile services program. Referrals to the program will be made through the LifeLinks Access Department, which Ashmore said takes phone calls, meets with possible clients, and addresses other matters needed to direct them to the programs they need. LifeLinks is located at 750 Broadway Avenue East in Mattoon and can be reached at 238-5700 or online at lifelinksinc.org. End of that article. Decatur makes administrative court changes effective July. By Allison Petty, Herald and Review staff writer. Probably Herald and Register. Decatur paper. City officials agreed Monday to monitor the progress of the city's administrative court in light of 4 operational changes that aim to address residents' complaints. The Decatur City Council heard hours of comments from landlords, attorneys, and others at a May 18th study session that then engaged in a lengthy discussion at the June 1st meeting. Because the council did not recommend a change to city code, City Manager Tim Gleason created the new measures after hearing from all parties. Three changes are coming in July: a publicly accessible online database where property owners can see neighborhood inspectors' active cases, a voluntary landlord registration system attached to city water billing, and an alternative education-based consequence for first-time offenders. Effective immediately, the time period that property owners are given to address nuisance violations has been lengthened to 4 business days. Neighborhood inspectors send a courtesy notification to the property owner and previously had allowed 4 days from the day the letter was mailed to fix the problem. No courtesy notification is sent for weeds violations. Grass higher than 10 inches leads to automatic citation. Council members Monday generally expressed support for Gleason's provisions, though some wanted to go further. Both Gleason and the council vowed to keep an eye on the court. "The council and the community have my word this will be continually reviewed internally," Gleason said, adding that he thought it'd be appropriate to conduct a study session every 2 years when a new council is seated. The council expanded the administrative court in 2012 to help clean up neighborhoods and provide alternative consequences to what might otherwise be considered relatively minor misdemeanors. Much of the criticism over the past 5 months has focused on property violations, with some landlords saying they were not given enough notice or time to fix problems before facing steep fines. Most property violations result in a $150 citation. Those found guilty in administrative court also face $140 in court costs, although it's possible to avoid a court appearance by correcting the violation and paying the fine. This article and section. In other business, the council voted unanimously to purchase 10 new police vehicles from Jackson Ford at the cost of $268,686. Faber initially suggested the council delay purchasing the vehicle for several months in light of uncertainty about the state's financial situation and how it'll affect the city. "We all know that a storm is on the horizon in Springfield," he said. But Gleason, Decatur Police Chief Brad Sweeney, and several council members said the city had already postponed buying new vehicles for years. "This is a really inappropriate time, but it's inappropriate time for up to 5 years," McElroy said. "Eventually, you got to bite the bullet and you got to do something." Sweeney said the cars are unsafe and the department cannot wait any longer. "Our police cars don't stop. They're broken down. That cost to repair them is far more than the value of the cars," he said. Sherry Procaroni, who announced earlier this month that she'd run for president as Republican, objected to the purchase of vehicles that would include cameras. Procariani asked McElroy if he could cite the law which allows you to usurp the U.S. Constitution and the Fourth Amendment, which she believes forbid the use of in-car cameras. Gleason said he would provide Procaroni with that information. That is the end of that article. It is the action end of the second part of the Decatur Herald and Review for June 17th, 2015, Thursday. It isn't Thursday, it's Wednesday, with Debbie, and I'll look forward to talking to you again next week, and I should be more experienced at that time.